We're back at the Wynn Resort in Las Vegas in the presidential battleground state of Nevada for the first Democratic debate of the 2016 campaign.
Well, we're going to win because first we're going to explain what democratic socialism is. It is wrong today in a rigged economy that 57% of all new income is going to the top 1%.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no,
no, no,
no. No. Woo! I'm a progressive, but I'm a progressive who likes to get things done as First Lady, as a senator from New York, and as Secretary of State. Every girl crazy about a
sharkness, man. And after 15 years of executive experience, I have learned how to be an effective leader.
Always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns, but I shot a man in Reno. Just to watch him die.
I'd have to say the enemy soldier that threw the grenade that wounded me, but he's not around right now to talk to.
You're looking at a block of granite when it comes to the issue. Don't be
what you say. Well, that does it for this Democratic presidential debate.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. And in the first Democratic debate, there was a search for a new identity for some of the candidates. Centrist Hillary Clinton was steering her huge, some might say difficult-to-maneuver container ship into progressive waters.
I think that, like most people that I know, I have a range of views, but they are rooted in my values and my experience. And I don't take a backseat to anyone when it comes to progressive experience and progressive commitment.
From centrist to progressive last night for Hillary Clinton. Bernie Sanders, though, preferred the rapids, and in his kayak, he stuck to democratic socialism.
What democratic socialism is about is saying that it is wrong today in a rigged economy that 57% of all new income is going to the top 1%.
They like to kayak up there in Vermont. Meanwhile, Martin O'Malley's canoe got rocked by questions about his record as mayor of Baltimore, the crime-ridden city famous for starring in The Wire.
We've saved over 1,000 lives in Baltimore in the last 15 years of people working together, and the vast majority of them were young and poor and black. It wasn't easy on any day, but we saved lives and we gave our city a better future, improving police and community relations every single day that I was in office.
Rhode Island Governor Lincoln Chafee seemed to want a fireside chat about bank regulation. Here he is explaining his vote to repeal Glass-Steagall.
The Glass-Steagall was my very first vote. I just arrived. My dad had died in office. I was appointed to the office. It was my very first vote.
Are you saying you didn't know what you were voting for?
I just arrived the Senate. I think we'd get some takeovers. That was one. It was my very first vote, and it was 92-5. It was the reconciliation.
With all due respect, what does that say about you, that you casting a vote for something you weren't really sure about?
I think you're being a little rough. I just arrived at the United States Senate. I'd been mayor of my city. My dad had died. I'd been appointed by the governor. It was the first vote, and it was 90-5.
But former Virginia Senator Jim Webb was, you might say, on a slim surfboard, and he kept ending up in the water, and he wasn't happy with the amount of time he had in this debate.
With respect to the financial sector, I mean, I know that my time's run out, but I mean, in speaking of changing positions and the positions on how this debate's occurred, it's kind of frustrating because unless somebody mentions my name, I can't get into the discussion.
You agreed to these rules, and you're wasting time. So well, if you would finish your answer,
well, I'm trying to set a mark here, so maybe we can get into a little more later on. This hasn't been equal time.
There was a parallel debate, or call it the tweet nut gallery, responding to everything that was going on in the debate. Here's some examples. Ezra Klein, editor-in-chief at Vox, tweeted, Bernie Sanders is causing Merriam-Webster searches for socialism to spike. Sideline tweeter Jeb Bush tried to be the master of the obvious. It's clear the Democrats on stage tonight are running for Obama's third term. Join me if you're ready to stop them. Donald Trump tweeted notes as though he was the judge from a game show called America's Got Talent. All are very scripted and rehearsed. Two at least should not even be on stage. Sorry, there's no star on the stage tonight. Sideline tweeter Governor Mike Huckabee went for laughs. Didn't quite get there. Marijuana question appropriate. Democrats smoking it if they think their policies will save this country. Or, I trust Bernie Sanders with my tax dollars like I trust a North Korean chef with my Labrador. Don't know if that worked, Mike. Todd Zwillick, not a word on the metric system. You people owe Lincoln Chafee an apology. Thanks for that, Todd. James Fallows, national correspondent for The Atlantic, wrote, "This is true of everyone, but dramatically true of Hillary Rodham Clinton tonight. The more jokey, relaxed, and playful she was, by far the better. Hillary's laughs were an asset." Matt Ford, also from The Atlantic, wrote, "Bernie Sanders promises some huge, classy, really impressive taxes for Donald Trump." 538, Clinton scandals were the subject of as many questions as immigration policy. Many different ways of analyzing this debate, many different ways of looking at it. Joining me now with more is Democratic pollster Anna Greenberg. Welcome back to The Takeaway, Anna. What did you see here?
Well, I saw a couple of different things. Overall, a very different field than in the Republican debates. A much more respectful, less racist, less misogynistic, very substantive. So I think overall this debate was extremely helpful for not just Hillary Clinton, and we can talk more about that, but for, I think, Democrats in general going into next year, a general election.
So would you say Democrats in general looked at the candidates or looked at Hillary Clinton and said, okay, we're on track here?
I think both. I mean, look, you can pick apart the performance of the individuals, and obviously people like Lincoln Chafee and Jim Webb had some not such fine moments. But I think overall, even if you don't like Bernie Sanders' style, like yelling into the microphone, for example, if you look at the content of what he was saying and the content of what Hillary Clinton was saying and the content of what Martin O'Malley was saying, it was very substantive, very progressive. And, you know, you talked about that tweet about an Obama third term is actually quite different, frankly, than Obama's economic agenda, for example. It was much more populist, a lot of attacks on Wall Street. What the media likes to do is pick apart the individual performances. But when I look at it as a pollster thinking about how the general election is going to shape up next year, there's just a huge contrast between these two fields on the Democratic and Republican side.
Let's talk about the notion of centrism as something that, you know, is maybe more important for the general. And as is always the case, candidates are going for the extremes or the more ideological voters in the primaries. Is that what you're seeing here? And that the liberal tone is for the primary process, or are these the positions of these candidates all the way to November if they should make it that far?
I think if you look at the range of positions taking on that stage, and again, there were not huge differences among these candidates, that those are going to be the issue positions they take going through next November. Let's face it, Democratic policy positions are much more popular than Republican policy positions. It doesn't mean Democrats win elections, to be clear, but if you look across a range of economic issues, for example, taxing the rich, or if you look at social issues, you know, gay marriage. You look at guns, if you look at the range of issues that they talked about on almost every one, most Americans tend to agree with Democratic positions. I don't really see there'll be any need on the part of any of those candidates. I mean, obviously, I don't think some of those are never going to make it very far, but there really isn't any need to moving to the side. I think Republicans have a much bigger issue around their base and sort of the positions they take, particularly on immigration. When you talk about a general electorate that's increasingly Hispanic, I think they've got a much bigger challenge around moving to the center. I don't really see, if you look at Hillary Clinton in particular as the front runner and the likely nominee, I didn't hear anything from her last night that suggested, wow, she's out of the mainstream and she's going to have to move to the center. If anything, you know, it's the Republicans that have that problem.
Contrast the sense of Clinton fatigue, if such a thing exists, with, as you've described, you've alluded here to the extraordinary demographic advantages that the Democratic Party has on all levels, whether we're talking about African Americans, Latinos, urban voters, younger voters. It seems as though for the first time in many, many election cycles, the primary process does not have to skew to the left to actually attract voters, that it can remain in this left to center kind of middle zone and stay pretty stable between now and November. That's suddenly a huge advantage for the Democrats, it seems to me.
I think that's right. But to go back to your earlier question about Hillary Clinton and fatigue, I think we need to remember we've had months of email scandal, quote unquote, scandal coverage that has been quite damaging in terms of her personal standing and sense of whether or not, you know, she's honest and trustworthy. But recall that she was hugely popular as first lady towards the end of the Clinton administration. She was popular as a Democratic candidate for president. She was unbelievably popular as Secretary of State. And so what we've all sort of forgotten, right, how much people loved Hillary Clinton because we've had this sort of single-minded focus on her and email and Clinton Foundation and the like for the last, you know, 6 months. And what happened last night is people remembered, oh, right, she's smart. She's funny. She knows what she's talking about. She's presidential. Oh, now I remember. I believe her favorability ratings overall, and particularly among Democrats, will get higher after this debate. I think people have forgotten that they liked Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State and when she left office.
The ghost of Biden?
I have a lot of respect for the vice president and particularly his very strongly and authentic and genuine populist views. But I do think it is difficult to figure out how he plays a role at this point in the primary electorate. And I think that she probably rebuilt her standing well enough among Democrats in the debate last night and presumably in subsequent debates that it makes it hard for him to find some room.
Anna Greenberg, Democratic pollster with Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.